Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Mario Ritter Jr., and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Pete Musto.
When Martha Kebedi's adult sons moved from Ethiopia to join her in the United States this year, they had few job possibilities. The brothers took jobs at Smithfield Foods' meat processing business near Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where their mother lives. The work there is difficult. It also has become increasingly risky. The new coronavirus has sickened thousands of meatpacking workers nationwide. One day, half the workers in one department did not show up for work. Later, the brothers tested positive for COVID-19. "It was very, very sad," Martha Kebedi told the Associated Press. Almost 175,000 immigrants are employed in the United States meatpacking industry. It has historically depended on foreign-born workers for some of the most dangerous jobs in the country. At least 20 meatpacking workers have died from COVID-19. Several meatpacking centers have temporarily closed because of the coronavirus spread. This has raised concerns about possible labor shortages to meet demand for cow, pig, and chicken meat. Companies struggling to find workers before the coronavirus crisis are spending millions on new ways to appeal to employees. Their ability to bring in new workers depends on things like unemployment levels, industry changes, and employees' feelings about safety. It also depends on U.S. President Donald Trump's immigration policies. Trump has restricted nearly all immigration, but his administration recently gave seasonal workers 60-day extensions, affecting some in the meatpacking industry. Daniel Costa with the Economic Policy Institute said that about 350 foreign workers were given official approval for meat industry jobs in 2019. Such H-2B visa holders, limited to 66,000 per year, are commonly employed in other industries. But there has been willingness to expand. In early March, the Trump administration announced that 35,000 additional foreign workers would be permitted into the U.S. to take seasonal jobs. The following month, the plan was suspended for present economic circumstances. The nonprofit Migration Policy Institute reports that immigrants represent about 40% of the nearly 470,000 workers in U.S. meatpacking. Estimates on undocumented immigrants vary from 14% to more than 50% at some factories. Industry leaders say they offer jobs with benefits and paths to higher positions for all workers. Paulina Francisco said, her 21 years at Smithfield in Sioux City, Iowa, helped her buy a home, something she did not think was possible when she immigrated from Guatemala. She is now a citizen. Still, most jobs are rural, limiting workers' access to lawyers, favorable labor laws, and other kinds of jobs. Hourly pay averages around $12 for physically demanding work. Workers in the country illegally fear being sent back if they take action against poor labor conditions. Vulnerable populations work well for the industry, said Joshua Specht, a University of Notre Dame professor. Sudanese refugee Salaheddin Ahmed moved to South Dakota 6 years ago to work at Smithfield. After escaping war, the 44-year-old says he feels little worry even after testing positive for the coronavirus. "They were killing in front of you," said Ahmed, of the violence he witnessed in Sudan. "The coronavirus is nothing." He has recovered from COVID-19. Some data suggests that police raids at these plants may temporarily decrease immigrant employment. Michael Clemens is a migration expert with the Center for Global Development, a nonprofit research group. He said non-citizens represented 52% of U.S. meatpacking in 2006 and then 42% in 2008. But during the Great Recession of 2008, those percentages changed again. By 2011, about 56% of meatpacking workers were non-citizens. With the fast turnover of employees, it is common for factories to re-employ an entire workforce yearly, says the nonprofit group National Employment Law Project, or NELP. It seeks policies that support workers' rights. NELP's Health and Safety Program Director, Debbie Berkowitz, said meatpacking companies want to look for workers they can exploit rather than workers that would feel comfortable raising concerns. The North American Meat Institute, an industry trade group, estimates most U.S. factories are at 70% production. Many meatpacking companies have added physical barriers between workers and other COVID-19 protections. I'm Pete Musto.
Orbital structures are becoming increasingly important for worldwide communications and a new generation of technologies. But scientists are warning that the danger of space debris is increasing very quickly. Space debris can include pieces of old rockets, non-operational satellites, lost tools, and other parts. These pieces of wreckage present a risk to spaceships, satellites, and space stations. In an effort to reduce the amount of debris orbiting the Earth, some experts suggest creating orbital use fees. A group of economists at the University of Colorado at Boulder proposed a yearly fee or tax on satellite operators for their use of an orbital path. The group's study on the subject appeared recently in the publication Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Matthew Burgess helped write the study. He said in a statement, "Space is a common resource, but companies aren't accounting for the cost their satellites impose on other operators when they decide whether or not to launch. Burgess added, "We need a policy that lets satellite operators directly factor in the costs their launches impose on other operators." The researchers said current rules do not permit satellite operators to secure property rights to orbital paths high above the Earth. Other operators also do not have to pay for costs related to incidents involving space debris, the researchers noted. The study said that this situation gives companies a reason to quickly launch into Earth orbit before it gets too crowded. Akhil Rao was the lead writer of the study. He said most proposed answers to the problem have been based on using technology to clear away the debris. Some suggestions, for example, call for nets or other devices that capture the space wreckage. But Burgess said that removing debris only means that operators will launch more satellites. He said an international treaty calling for a yearly fee or tax would push companies to be more mindful about launching more objects into space. Holger Krag heads the European Space Agency's Space Debris Office. He called the idea interesting and said his agency was studying similar possibilities. ESA was also considering ways to account for the environmental costs of space operations. Christopher Newman is a professor of space law at Northumbria University in Britain. He told the Thomson Reuters Foundation that carrying out a space tax could be tricky. Newman noted that such a cost could be seen as a restriction on the free use of space. That freedom is guaranteed in the Outer Space Treaty of 1967. The United Nations document has been signed by more than 100 nations. Newman added that the effort to place a fee on the use of space could easily be slowed by the many details involved. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
NASA is seeking candidates to go into isolation for 8 months in an experiment to help prepare for long-term stays on the Moon and Mars. Researchers say results of the study will help them better understand the physical and mental effects on humans spending extended periods in space. The experiment is part of NASA's Human Research Program. The program seeks to discover and develop the best methods and technologies to support safe, productive human space travel. Until now, American astronauts have only spent long space stays on the International Space Station, ISS. Most of these missions lasted several months, with the longest reaching nearly a year. The Human Research Program's new research is centering on NASA's future exploration goals that will involve more distant space travel for longer periods. The agency has said its Artemis program aims to return humans to the moon by 2024. Next, it plans to establish a long-term base on the moon by 2028. Astronauts could live on this base for long periods to carry out experiments and possibly launch missions from there to the moon or Mars. For the isolation study, NASA is partnering with the Institute of Biomedical Problems of Russia's Academy of Sciences. The experiment will take place at the organization's research center in Moscow. There are some requirements for individuals interested in taking part. Candidates must be between the ages of 30 and 55 years old and speak both English and Russian. They need a college degree and/or military training or professional experience. All individuals must also pass medical and psychological examinations. Those chosen for the study will experience environmental aspects similar to those astronauts are expected to experience on future missions to Mars, NASA said in a statement. Crew members in the six-person group will work closely while carrying out scientific research. Some of the experiments will involve virtual reality and performing robotic operations to prepare for future missions to the Moon and Mars, NASA said. The new experiment will build on a four-month study that ended in July 2019. That study, involving an international crew of six, took place at the same research center in Moscow. In 2016, six scientists took part in a year-long Mars simulation in Hawaii. During that study, the scientists could only go outside their small experiment area while wearing spacesuits. The research centered on how well the team worked together in long-term isolation, as well as the psychological effects on humans. The European Space Agency carried out a similar experiment in Moscow that started in 2010. The Mars simulation study, known as Mars 500, included six crew members, three Russian, two European, and one Chinese. It was the longest such experiment yet, lasting 520 days. Parts of the environment were built to simulate an actual spacecraft and Mars transportation vehicle. During the 520 days, the individuals had only personal contact with each other. They could also communicate with family and friends, but only in the same ways that would be permitted during a real space mission. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, we visit a place of strange and silent beauty. As beautiful as this place is, its name provides evidence of very real danger. We are exploring Death Valley National Park. Death Valley is a land of beautiful yet dangerous extremes. It has nearly 1.4 million hectares of desert and mountains. There are mountains that reach more than 3,000 meters into the sky. The valley's Badwater Basin area is the lowest land in the Western Hemisphere. It lies 86 meters below sea level. Death Valley can be dangerously cold during the winter months. Storms in the mountains can cause sudden floods on the floor of the valley. But during summer months, the air temperature has been as high as 57 degrees Celsius. The extreme heat of Death Valley has killed people in the past. Death Valley does not forgive those who are not careful.
Within Death Valley National Park is evidence of several ancient volcanoes that caused huge explosions. Evidence of one of these explosions is called Yubihibi Crater. The explosion left a huge hole in the ground, almost a kilometer and a half wide. In many areas of Death Valley, it is easy to see where the ground has been pushed up violently by movement deep in the earth. This has created unusual and beautiful rock formations with colors of red, brown, gray, yellow, and black. In other parts of Death Valley, there are lines in the rock. The lines are evidence of the past presence of water. The area was deep under an ocean for many thousands of years. Much of Death Valley is flat and extremely dry. In fact, scientists believe it is the driest place in the United States. In some areas, the ground is nothing but salt. Nothing is able to grow in this salty ground.
However, it would be wrong to think that nothing lives in Death Valley. The valley is full of life. Wildflowers grow very quickly, even after a small amount of rain. Some desert plants can send their roots down more than 18 meters to reach water deep in the ground. Several kinds of birds live in Death Valley, as do mammals and reptiles. Visitors might see the dog-like animal called the coyote, or wild bighorn sheep, or other animals like the desert jackrabbit, the desert tortoise, and a large reptile called a chuckwalla. Many different snakes live there too. Some are dangerous, like the sidewinder rattlesnake. It is an extremely poisonous snake with long, sharp teeth, or fangs. Throughout history, Native Americans found ways to survive in Death Valley. Rock art and other remains show that humans lived in the valley as far back as 9,000 years ago.
Death Valley is a huge place. It extends more than 225 kilometers across the southern part of California into the neighboring state of Nevada. The valley is part of the Mojave Desert. The area got its name in 1849. That was the year after gold was discovered in California. Thousands of people from around the country traveled to the gold mining areas of the state. They were in a hurry to get there before other people did. Many people were not careful during their travels. One group trying to reach California decided to take a path called the Old Spanish Trail. By December, they had reached Death Valley. They did not have to survive the terrible heat of summer, but there was still an extreme lack of water. There were too few plants for their work animals to eat. The people could not find a pass through the tall mountains to the west of the valley. Slowly, they began to suffer from a lack of food. To survive, they killed their work animals for food and began to walk out of the valley. As they left, a woman in the group looked back and said, "Goodbye, Death Valley." The name has never been changed.
Death Valley officially became a national park in 1994. It is the largest national park in the lower 48 states. More than 1 million people visit the park each year. Titus Canyon is one of the most popular places to visit in the park. It has huge mountains, colorful rocks, ancient rock art, and rare plants. There is even a ghost town, a town that has been abandoned by all its residents. Death Valley is full of ghost towns. Many people visit Death Valley in late winter and early spring, when wildflowers come to life there. The harsh desert floor becomes very colorful.
Some visitors come to Death Valley for just a day. Tour buses bring travelers from Las Vegas, Nevada. They ride around the park in their bus, visit several places, and are back in their Las Vegas hotel by night. However, many other visitors stay in the park. The most popular area to stay in is Furnace Creek. Furnace Creek is the largest area of human activity within Death Valley National Park. There is a hotel as well as places to camp. The historic inn at Furnace Creek is built on a low hill. The main public room in the hotel has large windows that look far out over Death Valley. Hotel guests gather near these large windows in the evening to watch the sun make long shadows on the floor of the valley and on the far mountains. This beautiful image seems to change each minute. The sun slowly turns the valley a gold color that deepens to a soft brown, then changes to a dark red. As night comes, the mountains turn a dark purple color, then black. Usually, visitors are very quiet as they watch the setting sun. A few try to photograph it, but the valley is too huge to capture in a photo. Most visitors leave only with the memory of the fiery sunset in the extraordinary Death Valley National Park. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.